Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
The fact that I started wearing pants was a big deal. Mm-hmm. I was, in their view, jeopardizing my salvation.
Did you guys keep like a foot between you? No, I'm just kidding.
Six-inch rule.
Actually, there was a six-inch rule. And could you hold hands?
Not until we were engaged.
Whoa.
And we didn't kiss until our wedding day.
With or without the reality show, this control issue would have been a thing. A big tool of control is to like isolate people.
Yeah.
Her dad would say like, don't talk about finances or the show with any other people because they wouldn't understand.
One of the core teachings was you're not supposed to limit the number of children that you have. A lot of families would have as many as their body would spit out.
It's wild.
Did you guys ever shut down any Kids Eat Free restaurants as a family?
Wait, think so.
You did?
We sat down with Jill Ducker and her husband, Derek Dillard, from the hit TLC TV show, 19 Kids and Counting. Jill grew up in a strict household that was a part of the Institute of Basic Life Principles, also known as the IBLP. And the Institute has since been criticized for its cult-like characteristics. In a recent Amazon documentary, Jill and Derek opened up about never being paid for their involvement on the TV show. We talk about all this and so much more in today's interview.
We just recently watched Shiny Happy People, the documentary.
Happy Shiny People.
Happy, wait.
No, Shiny Happy People.
Oh,
yeah.
You're right. Shiny Happy People.
I got it right.
It was 2 years ago that you filmed that, and it just
almost
came out.
Almost 2 years ago, yeah.
I was pregnant with our youngest, Freddie, and now he is
like
17 months.
A half.
Yeah, a year and a half.
Wow. So were you expecting that big of a delay in between? I mean, you're kind of used to that.
I mean, yes. With growing up on just filming all the time for TV show and stuff, I was used to there being a delay, but generally the delay would be no more than like 6 months, 3 to 6 months.
It kind of fell off our radar, and we actually were talking with each other shortly before it came out. We were like, didn't we, like, whatever happened with that interview we did?
I had never even heard of the IBLP ever. I didn't know what that was until the documentary. So that was all new to me. So I'm curious, did it accurately depict what the IBLP was from your perspective?
I think they did a really good job of setting it up for people, like you're saying, who've never heard of IBLP, this organization that I kind of grew up in, and the wild, crazy ideas that a bunch of people just caught on to.
It tended to draw a lot of people from broken backgrounds who wanted a checklist of what they could do to fix their lives. People felt like this is like the key versus like relationship with Jesus. That's where I feel like they did a good job of kind of distinguishing between the two of like what true Christianity is meant to look like versus like what essentially a cult looks like. And I thought that documentary did a good job of describing that well.
But I think they also were not, they're not coming from the perspective of advocating for something. All they're doing is like presenting these facts and then saying like, here's how it got here.
One of the moments in your book where I was totally blown away was seeing, I think you mentioned having to leave a church that had some sort of event or something where there were kids dancing on stage.
It was a
Christmas program with kids dancing on stage, and your family left, right? That was something that was not allowed in IBLP households.
No. Yeah. It would be very much something that if we didn't just pick up and leave during, then we would, after the fact, like my parents might like apologize to us. Like, I'm so sorry, kids, that you had to see that or whatever.
So you never danced growing up?
And then we wouldn't go back. No. Mm-mm.
No dancing.
Like, no.
How do you qualify what dancing is though, because like our toddler, when we turn on music,
he loves
to dance.
Yeah,
and it's so cute, but he'll do like this little running thing.
Yeah,
and so is
jumping for joy. Like that's what my my parents so would call it jumping for joy. Jumping for joy might be okay if you're just like jumping like on a trampoline. Yay, I'm so excited. Oh my goodness, we got
whatever. You have to redefine it. But even if it's jumping for joy, the same action, but you call it something different, that's no. You can't call it dancing.
Did you grow up in an IBLP household?
No. I didn't know anything about IBLP until we started, around the time we started talking.
So you didn't have 18 other siblings like Jill?
That was no, I had one other sibling, yeah.
Culture shock coming into my family.
And was that something that was normal in IBLP families? Were there a lot of families with almost 20 kids or 10 plus kids?
Yes. So IBLP, I would say, like, looking at their group, one of the main things that you would see going to like a conference or something like that would be families with lots of kids, because one of the core teachings was that you're not supposed to limit the number of children that you have. So a lot of families would have 10, 12 kids, as many as their body would, you know, spit out. So at our ages, what was it, like 11 kids?
Yeah, 11 or 12 kids your parents had at our age.
I was like,
yeah. Wow. I don't even know the math, but I'm like trying to figure out, I'm like, okay, 9 months is a standard pregnancy. I'm like, how does that even happen? Like, that's crazy. There's multiple.
My mom would usually get pregnant with the next kid when the baby was like 6 months old. That was like average.
Holy cow.
For her. Like, I feel like it.
That is so wild.
No, like, having 6 to 10.
No protection, like not even condoms. Like, that's not okay. I'm sorry. I don't know. Like literally nothing at all. Or.
I mean, I didn't usually have those conversations with my parents, but I know that they did not.
Yeah.
Believe if we had in asked contraception. About using condoms, that's what they would say.
They would
say.
Have been like,
don't do it.
Yeah.
Did you guys ever shut down any kids eat free restaurants as a family?
Wait, think so. You did? There was this one, AQ Outback. Remember, you used to go there.
Families like mine suffered for it because then we couldn't go get.
All of us and our friends. Yeah. Changed their rules. Yeah. Because we, you know, you find out where the kids eat free places are and you tell all your other homeschool family friends who have like 8 and 10 and 12 kids.
That was a hack.
You know what? Like Derek would say, he's like, this is a poor business decision. They're the ones making the decision.
Right.
You know, like there are lots of those places.
You can't run yourself.
But when they make that deal, they're not thinking about a family of 21 coming in.
We went there for so long. They would have known, like,
they're coming.
Eventually, they know.
They start ordering extra food for you guys. That's what I think about. I'm like,
or the taco place. Like, we used to go to this taco place and get a bunch of tacos. And finally, they're like, can you call ahead?
That's so wild. I think about the logistics of a family that size. And I'm just so impressed.
Looking back, I'm like, wow, like having kids, 3 boys of our own now. I'm like, how did my parents do it? You know, because they have so many kids trying to keep everything afloat. And then, as we got older, I think it just kind of, it did evolve into all of us carrying a lot of the weight, like teamwork, just somebody's in charge of lunch and preparing dinner and breakfast, whatever.
Because you had to also, correct me if I'm wrong, but as a teenager, you almost had to play mom for your younger siblings, right? And help raise them and wake up with them in the night if they woke up and they were crying. Because there's no way that your mom could have taken care of all 19 kids, right?
Yeah. So we had a buddy system where an older child would be paired with a younger sibling or 2 or 3. And that way at home, nobody slipped through the cracks. There was always somebody knowing, like, making sure this one got lunch and this one got their diaper changed. And not that my parents wouldn't change the diapers or whatever. Like, they were always changing. Both my parents were always changing diapers too. But, like, especially when we were out and about, we had to help make sure that nobody got left anywhere.
Yeah.
But I never changed a diaper until I was 26.
Yeah, Derek.
And
really?
When did you change your first diaper? How old were you?
Probably like 6 or something. I don't know.
Yeah, 20-year difference when we first changed our first diapers.
I got my first buddy whenever I was about 6.
And you were 26?
A baby when you were 6?
Yeah, I got my first like buddy baby like, to help take care of. Not as much as I would have later. Like, I didn't do quite
your
as much as I would
next two children you
I
took care
older,
of more.
Did probably. You wake up in the night with them?
No, I didn't. I wasn't to that level. There's, you know, different levels.
That's so wild.
But my mom actually, like, during the night, she would keep, like, the itty-bitty babies with her in her room. And then even during the night, like, if we woke up with a kid, like, they would help. My mom was she's just that nurturing personality. Mm-hmm. So she was very involved, like, up through the night and everything with the kids. Like, if somebody's sick, it's her dealing with them. It's not us.
But you didn't have your own bed, though, for a while.
We had our own beds. We just, the kids always piled in with us.
Well, I meant like, you didn't sleep by yourself. You
didn't sleep by yourself. I didn't like to sleep by myself. Like, I always had one or two in bed with me. And Derek, on the other hand, like, he,
I never shared a room until I was in my
20s. He's like, I never even shared a room until I was in college. And then I was like, I always had somebody in bed with me. So I'm like, I don't know what to do if there's nobody in bed with me.
Because you had how many siblings, Derek?
I had one.
One, yeah. Okay.
I got one younger brother.
Younger brother, he's 33.
That's so, you're like, I just had one or two. Like, literally children sleeping.
Like, you know, like, that's like sweet. You guys probably now with your littles.
I remember reading in your book that you kept crock pots in the car with you when you go places to have food ready on the go. Because I guess there's just no way to afford fast food or takeout when you have that many children. And your mom's staying home, so it's not like your mom was working outside of the home.
Yeah.
So
we took like, so if we were going to music lessons, we would take a crock pot with chili and go. Yeah, to music lessons because we might be there all day, you know, for these once a month group lesson times. And
when you were young, like, were you guys
young and poor?
Yeah, were you poor basically? Like, with that many children, or was it just really hard to pay the bills? Because I can imagine that many children under one roof, that the expenses must have been astronomical, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't balancing the budget with my parents, but I did know that there were times before the show where things were very tight and my parents would say, hey, we need to pray for this or that.
Well, you told me about a time, one time
we sold this property.
Yeah, you told me about it one time where you put your blanket in the freezer so that whenever you went to bed, you'd be cool without AC.
Yeah, like when we moved, we were staying in a rental house. This was after the show had started, but before the series started. Our AC went out in this rental house and it was just really hot. So my sisters and I like stuck our sheets and pillowcases, I think, or pillows in Walmart sacks in the freezer, in the deep freeze, just to cool them down. So that way, whenever we got in bed, then we'd feel cooled down. And then when we moved into our big house that like we all helped build, and the show was helping some, but again, it was right around the time that the bigger series started. Mm-hmm. We didn't have AC that whole first summer that we lived in the house. We didn't even have water, running water for 2 weeks when we moved into the house. Like, we had an outhouse, a porta potty outside that like we had to go and use for 2 weeks because of the overlap of when we were wrapping up. The show wanted us to like move in and film this moving scene, and you know, like building a house, construction, it just, everything takes longer.
Yeah.
So it wasn't even finished when we moved in. And so yeah, that first summer we didn't even have AC. And then a family friend, like, they bought window units when they were like, you don't have AC, and they came to visit and they were hot and stuff and they were really sweet. They bought us like window units for each of the bedrooms, 3 bedrooms. And then we finally got the AC because it was a big expense.
This episode of the Unplanned Podcast is brought to you by Huggies Little Movers.
Early on in parenthood, we bought the off-brand diapers and we had blowouts galore. It felt like we were constantly cleaning onesies because there's poop on everything. And that's when we decided, let's spend a little bit more, get nicer diapers, not the cheapest kind. And we got Huggies and it really helped with the blowouts. Oh my gosh.
And I think it's because of the fit of the Huggies Little Movers.
Yes.
It fits the baby's bum perfectly, so there cannot be leakage.
I literally just got some Huggies 2 days ago for Griffin because he ran out of overnight diapers, and so I got the Huggies overnights.
It just makes sense because Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes and their tushies do too.
Yep.
So their diapers should as well. And Huggies knows that because they're the best fitting diaper, and their Little Movers with its curved and stretchy fit.
Think about all the money that you save from not having to like run your washing machine all the time to clean out poop from onesies. Also, all the cleaning agents you have to use to get the poop out of the onesie. I don't know. It's nice. It saves you time. It saves you money. So I think it's just worth it to get a better diaper like Huggies so you don't have to deal with all of that.
Yeah, they also offer up to 12-hour protection against leaks, which is a game changer, especially when your baby starts to sleep longer stretches in the night. You do not want something like a wet diaper.
No.
Uncomfortable diaper, leaking diaper.
And then they get diaper rash. Diaper rash is so sad.
It's so sad.
You don't want to deal with that. So get yourself some Huggies.
Get your baby's butt into Huggies' best fitting diaper. Huggies Little Movers. We got you, baby.
Back to the episode.
My goodness. Isn't that crazy?
So yeah. They helped pay for the house a little bit.
TLC would cover, like, for example, like there might be an interior designer who comes to like film this mm-hmm. like, hey, the house is all finished or whatever. Like, we're yeah. moving in. And so they come and stage it with all of their things. And then I remember that we got to pick a certain number of decorations to keep, and the rest went back to the shop. Like,
no way.
Yeah. That's just like how they would, like, they would stage what? The house, and then there's like a furniture company that might give furniture, and somebody might give a piano because it's what do they call it? Like organic placement. Product placement. So there might be product placements that you get things, and then I don't them? Know behind the scenes like how much financially it was being like, oh, we're gonna
for the cover construction or whatever,
the construction of this or that. Like, I don't know all those numbers, but at the time I'm just like, oh yeah, we get this or that. And then but yeah, with the decorations and all that, I do remember them saying like, okay, pick however many things, and that's then we're sad. Taking the rest back, or you can buy them. There was an option, but they're, you know, it's like
designer, really pricey. So yes. expensive.
Yes, but like we got to pick out our beds. I do remember that, like,
neat.
There was a magazine and somebody was sponsoring whatever, so we got to pick out new beds, and we were like, oh, this is fun.
That's cool.
So,
you know, at some point along the way with the show's progression, you guys meet, that, you know, and it was all televised. It was all on TV.
Yeah.
Derek, how did that make you feel to be meeting this girl or courting this girl, and it's all being recorded?
Yeah. Like, going into it, I didn't know how it would work out, because I remember I was on the top of this like really basic hotel in Top Lejung, Nepal, and just basically concrete building on the roof of it after we got back from like a long, long trek in the Himalayas, and like talking to her dad. And he was like, so, like, we would like to bring some of the film crew along. That's how we're going to be able to do this. And later I learned he had told you, like, we're not gonna be able to go unless we bring the film crew along. And I was like, well,
that's just kind of the way our life was at the time. It was different for me, but
you were more used to it. But, we were kind of going around Kathmandu, Nepal. And I remember, I think your dad said, oh, is this kind of like what you do every day? This is like your day-to-day life. And I was like, no, I've actually never been to this part of the city. This is like a tourist attraction. And I like I have 2 weeks of vacation a year, and yeah. I had to take a week of vacation for this time.
And now you're filming it.
Yeah. And this is like nothing to do with like what I would normally
be doing.
But
he's
just
trying to make small talk and everything. Yeah. And it's
you're just trying to make small
but
talk.
But no, this, I don't want people think like it's this like awkward, like I don't want people thinking I'm just tourist.
That
all
I'm just
the time,
touring
every
Kathmandu
day.
Every day, and like this is my but life the last 2 years.
You're like, this is great, but
this
no.
is great, but I'm having to take vacation time for it, and it's going to count against like.
There were
the other
things
time.
Like that where, not just my dad, but like people in general with the filming side uh-huh. of things, and it being very much like reality show. So like it's your life to some degree, but it's not very realistic. Mm-hmm. In other aspects.
And counting the cost, in our book we go into more detail talking about how when Jill came to Nepal, it was the goodbye was like scripted. Like whenever she went back to the airport,
yeah,
like when we got in the taxi and she's like, I'll pretend to cry, and you know, and she's going back home to Arkansas.
Basically the film crew could only stay for 1 week.
Yeah,
we wanted to have at least 2 weeks together. And so
taxi
like,
driver
well,
was
we have
completely
to film
confused.
This goodbye scene.
taxi driver's completely confused. Like, not only is this weird,
like,
but this is weird.
Why did you hire me not to take you anywhere? Like,
not only is this a weird situation, not only is this a weird situation in America, but this would be weird, you know, because we're in a different country.
Especially
and,
in
like,
Nepal.
You call, like, you're a taxi driver in South Asia. So you get a call, and then, like, okay, we need to go to the airport. But he's like, but we're not really going to go to the airport. And he's like, okay. And he's like, he didn't really understand.
He's like,
he drives off
up?
Like, okay, stop. Now just take her back. Okay, now it's done. You can go. He's like, that was weird.
Oh, here's a question I actually have about reality
we
TV.
Got a good tip.
Are they? Oh, yeah. Sure. Are they like paying these people for their film time, or is it just kind of volunteer? Like, hey, we want to record you for our reality TV show.
I mean,
and
the
DLC.
Taxi driver got like paid probably
for his job. They probably got a good tip.
Okay,
good tip. Yeah,
that's at least good.
But they wouldn't pay, like, if our friends were on TV, like they're not paying them to come to a birthday party or
got
something
it. That makes
or
sense.
Paying them. But even then, I feel like sometimes the friends might get gypped a little if they are like very much a part of whatever is happening.
Okay.
And then there's no,
they like, pay us for our birth.
Like, there's demands that are being made. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, we need you to do this or that. And then it's like, sometimes they would expect people to kind of just
and that
kind of
goes into the book too
about
like the lack
whatever's
of
happening.
yeah, that kind of goes in, we go into that in the book too, about the lack of communication. Was a lot of things could be solved just by like better communication and better expectations or lack thereof.
I think whenever some people would come into the whole filming world, friends, whatever, and some people might be more like starry-eyed, like, oh my goodness, this is so exciting, like whatever you want, I'll be there to help.
And that's
those where kind of people, like, that might be great for accomplishing whatever needs to go down with filming. But then I hated to see other times when people unintentionally would get like taken advantage of.
That's where you're talking about steamrolled, basically, whenever it's like, after a while of doing this, and again, I'm not saying it was intentional, but just like, because of the way things have been, it's almost like, why would you not want to be on reality TV? It's like, well, then you should be okay doing whatever requests we have you making instead of asking that person.
Mm-hmm. But that happened. Is there like a specific example you can think of that, like, happened?
The first few years of our marriage.
Guys were like working full time, or I guess initially you guys were missionaries in South America, but you're working, and in addition to all that, you're doing 40 hours a week of filming, right? That's what your life was like?
Yeah, so when we first got married, in our early relationship, Derek was working in Nepal, and then when we got married, right before we got married, in our first
like engaged,
year and a half of marriage, he was working for...
like from the time...
Walmart corporate.
So yeah, like from the time...
45 hours a week.
About a month before we got engaged until after our first son was born, I was working 40 hours a week as a tax accountant at Walmart headquarters. So yeah, during that whole, like, the progression of our relationship, engagement, marriage, early marriage relationship, birth of our first son, like, all that was working full time, and we didn't get a dime from filming or anything.
Wow.
Like, if they filmed, like, and again, it was like 20 hours a week, probably just exhausting, and you've got to cram it all into evenings and weekends. You don't really have any time together outside of that as a couple.
I mean, there were perks to filming, this or that, get whatever. But,
and you felt obligated to do that because of your parents and because of, I think, talked about in the book, but just this view of the show of being a ministry. So you thought, okay, even though this is taking a lot of time out of my day in addition to my actual job, I'm going to do it because I view this as a ministry.
Yeah, it was a couple things, I feel like. So like we talk about in the book, it was definitely this idea of it being a family ministry, which I feel like anybody who's been in kind of this family ministry role, a PK, like a preacher kid or a missionary's kid or whatever kind of ministry your family might be involved in, those kinds of things, like, you might have a hard time with that gray area of boundaries and kind of finding out who you are. And then on top of that, this culture that I came from where you're just this persistent, you're treated almost like a persistent teenager, like forever. Like, you're just kind of, there's not really this...
like perpetual adolescence, basically. Yeah, like never really growing
like
out of that.
You mature quickly, but then you kind of like stay in this idea of just perpetually under your parents' authority and all that. So there's not really this point where you break away. So that combined with... just it almost being this family business thing, but not really having control and say so. So even later when we started seeing a therapist, it was really interesting to us where he could relate to us on some fronts, because he said that he grew up in a farming family and a dairy farm. So he said that it was very hard to kind of sort that out with his siblings and the whole family on the business side of things. And I've heard that, like, with family businesses and it getting a little hairy.
Mm-hmm. We didn't even have an expectation of payment until we realized that we didn't have control. Like, it was like years into our marriage where we were making the transition. We're like, okay, we were glad to have helped the family for a little bit. And we were like moving to make the transition out. And they're like, no, you're not allowed to go out. Like, I'm sorry, that's not an option.
Again, it goes back to that whole
and
culture.
I was like, yeah.
Like, family culture thing, like almost like a family farm. Like, no, you can't leave the family farm. Like, who's going to take care of it? This is supposed to stay in the family. Mm-hmm. This is our ministry. This is our family, whatever. Like
you're not allowed to.
Like, it's kind of this like idea.
And then once we realize we're like, well, if we're not allowed to, then like we are giving up something. So we want to at least see something in return.
Yeah. That's more than fair.
Yeah. If we're being required to do it, and not like we were fine before it, when it's just like, as we're able to, we'll do as much as we can without that expectation. But once we find out that there's a requirement, then that's going to change things.
Then we need to sit down at the table at that point.
I know.
And then it Yeah, there wasn't that ability to do that.
We go into that in the book a lot, so, you know, counting the cost.
But. Obviously, your family was different because you were on reality TV, but was this same thing that you were dealing with similar to what other IBLP families had in place where you were like a perpetual teenager, essentially, always under your parents' authority, had to obey them even when you're 25? Because I think you were 25
well,
when you guys were recording.
Have your own family.
Yeah, and you have your own family, your own kids.
I think that that was very much part of this IBLP culture. They had these seven basic principles, and I think the main pillar was this principle of authority, where it's almost like this umbrella of protection they talk about, where you have God and then you have like the parents and the government and like the kids under that, and just like this ranking system. And if you're not abiding by your parents' authority forever, then you're getting out from under their blessing. And if you're out from under their blessing, then you're opening yourself up to like evil and bad things happening. Getting in a car crash could be as a result of not obeying your parents, even far into adulthood.
And what about the boys, though? What about the men, once your brothers grew up and they were adults? Was it the same for them, or were they treated differently?
It was, but it was different. Like, it was the same in the way that they were expected to get blessing for decisions, especially major decisions like buying a house.
They had to get a blessing to buy a house from your dad?
Yeah, like, it would be looked down upon if you did not get your parents' blessing in any major life event. So, like, to date someone, to for sure to marry somebody, but like if you were going to stop having kids, you should probably like get their insight on that. And like just everything, it like if you were to go against the grain on anything, like the fact that I started wearing pants whenever I grew up wearing skirts all the time, like, was a big deal.
This episode is sponsored by ShipStation. I know that there are a lot of small business owners out there probably listening to this very podcast, and I have something that is really going to help you with your new business in the new year. The new year is a great time to grow your business, but if you're stuck in the trenches of daily tasks like managing order fulfillment, you're not able to focus on what really matters, which is increasing sales. Now, what ShipStation does is it easily automates your shipping tasks and helps you manage orders in one simple dashboard. So say you're getting orders from eBay and Etsy and I don't know, what's other places people order things?
Walmart.
Sure. Say you have all these different websites that your product is being sold on. ShipStation will aggregate all of those into one simple dashboard, like I said, so you can print off the shipping labels in one place. And it doesn't just make your life easier, it also
saves you money.
That's
because
right.
ShipStation saves you up to 89% off of UPS and USPS rates.
Yes, it will be a great way to blow up your business in the new year or make things more streamlined and easier for you to manage. Make this year your most profitable one yet with ShipStation. Use promo code UNPLANNED today at ShipStation.com to sign up for your free 30-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, promo code UNPLANNED.
Back to the episode.
I was in their eyes making decisions that would potentially be harmful to me and were so big and counter their cultural, countercultural. That I would go so far as to say, like, in their view, jeopardizing my salvation at that point.
And like, really, the reality TV just poured gasoline on the fire that was already there, like, because that would have been the case, I think. And Jill and I have talked about this, like, with or without the reality show, this control issue would have been a thing, but it just blew everything out of proportion with, like, well, now if the patriarch has more money, there's more control and there's more things you can hold over somebody.
When did you notice that your dad ended up putting the show above the family?
It's hard to pinpoint like one time, because it did evolve. It was very much in a evolution, but it was still always very much like we talk about in the book, where there's this whole, like, it's a ministry, but it's also a financial business decision as well. So you can play to whichever side you want.
Like, 95% sure the show would not have persisted as long as it did if as each adult sibling became an adult and said, I would rather not do filming. And if none of the adults wanted to do filming, it would just, it wouldn't have persisted that long.
We also didn't have the freedom to make that guilt-free decision either. You might be presented with like a pseudo decision, choice, whatever. Yeah. But then there's still this like, but we kind of expect this to be in our good graces type thing, which I think other people can relate to as well. Like, every family's going to have their family dynamics, mm-hmm. and it might not look exactly like ours, but
in this situation, there wasn't even a pseudo choice. It was just like, and here's where you need to be. Here's hopefully where you
have
to
a,
be there.
Yeah.
Hopefully you feel like we have a contract.
So going through that, living through that, being the guinea pig, because I think your show was one of the first big reality TV shows, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, like, it was part especially of like a core group of, like Little People, Big World, John and Kate Plus Eight. Yes. And then,
many others followed because it did so well. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure made TLC a ton of money and made your parents a ton of money. But I'm so curious too, now with the rise of social media, mm-hmm. we're seeing now people vlogging with their kids. And I'm so curious what your take is on that too.
I think for parents nowadays with social media and just involving your kids, you have to reevaluate what's best for y'all, like what's best for your kids. Think about their long term, mm-hmm. like what's going to be good for them. And even if they're okay with it, is it good for them? It's kind of like giving your kid a phone. Like, are they okay with it because they like it? And then later, like, it could be harmful. Like, at what mm-hmm. age is that okay? Every family is going to be different. And so, and then with the work or whatever, like, at what point do I need to take a step back? Or what point do we reevaluate and say, okay, maybe we're involving them a little bit too much? Mm-hmm. It's hard. There's not like a firm line.
Constantly reevaluate. Uh-huh. Like, whether it's that's every 6 months, every year, like, have a real honest sit down discussion, say,
do we want to? So we've done that. Like, we aren't.
Yeah, I noticed
we don't have it all figured out.
I noticed that you guys stopped showing your kids on social media. I was looking through your Instagrams and saw that you used to. And then I think like 2 years ago, I think around there, you stopped showing your kids. So I'm guessing you guys made that decision. You didn't want to.
It was more like I was talking to Derek and I was like, I just don't know how I feel about, like, as we were going through therapy and just processing all of the things that we've kind of lived growing, like me growing up on reality TV and kind of my life, very vulnerable moments being pressed to show those. And then everybody, you know how it is, like people are so involved in your lives and like paparazzi that then they want more, 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 and they want to know. And if you don't post, then they're like, what's wrong? Mm-hmm. Are you sick? Are you dying? Like, whatever, you know, it's just like this constant thing.
I can't believe that, your birth, your wedding, everything at the time of all that being filmed, you didn't get any sort of financial gain from that.
Yeah.
At the time, did you feel like you were, I guess, a pawn in a way? Did you almost feel as if like, okay, this is the good story that the network wants to show and this is a ministry, so I have to do this. I have to do this for my family, even though I'm not really gaining anything from
it. That was a struggle in our marriage early on. And I respected our marriage over what I felt we should do because I don't want to, like, you know,
golly. I think if he had come down too hard then it would have been really bad.
This is ridiculous. We're doing this or whatever, and it's to destroy our marriage. I'm like, I really think this should happen, but like, I'm going to wait until we're at a good point in our marriage. Like, because I value our marriage more than I value, like,
money.
By golly, we're going to do this or something. Like, we're going to not do this at all. We're going to require whatever this or this is, or that.
But you were probably thinking, okay, the show's Jill and Jessa counting on. You know, the birth, the wedding, all that televised, all of it, you know, biggest moment of the story, biggest point of the season, over 4 million
surely
viewers.
Surely at some point we're going to see.
And you're like,
yeah, I think at surely at some
why
point.
Are we not being paid a dime?
It's just such an interesting dynamic because it's not like you can go to like the producers necessarily. Your point of contact is your own father, and you have this culture of IBLP, or like thing, it's just so multifaceted. It's just
enabled the behavior, and enabled
it's all feeding itself.
Yeah,
I feel like a big tool of control is to like isolate people, and the more Jill told me that growing up, the more I was like, yes, that makes total sense. Where it's like, her dad,
if
would,
you can isolate
her dad
someone,
would say, yeah,
you
her
can
dad
control
would,
them. Yeah.
Her dad would say, like, don't talk about, like, finances or the show with any other people because they wouldn't understand. Mm. Like, they don't do reality TV, so you just need to, like, you know, basically put you in a bubble and, like, trying to put a wall between you and other people.
Something that you touched on, not to do, like, a hard 180, but something that we talked about earlier was your guys' courtship. And I think a lot of our viewers would probably be interested in that.
Oh, yeah.
Regarding, we talk about relationships a lot, and I don't think that I kind of know what courtships look like, but if you kind of want to like detail what that looked like, I'm very curious.
Yeah. So courtships in the world I grew up in, because I grew up in this IBLP culture, was a lot different, even though Derek grew up in a Christian home with one brother and all that, like, even his view of, like, dating / I don't think you had ever heard of courting other than your grandparents being like, I courted your grandma. My grandparents called
it courting, but everyone called it courting in the 50s.
But yeah, his understanding of it was a lot different than mine. They're
still making out in the car. I'm sorry.
No, probably.
I think your grandparents called it parking. I asked them on our podcast. I was like, what was parking? They didn't want
to. You
want
to go park?
They're like, no comment.
That's necking. That's funny. Yeah, so courtship in my family growing up was understood to be like, you must get the parents' permission and blessing. If you don't have that, like, no go at all. Like, you don't date the person, you don't get to know the person on that level at all. It's like rebellious and unchristian of you to do that. So courtship, you must have parents' approval on both sides, like his and hers. And then they have to also be very involved in the relationship, like helping you make sure you're making the best decisions for both of you. Like, what are your boundaries? What are your rules? Like, what are your standards? Are you, like, they want to know what that is. Like, whether or not they're the ones telling you what to do, which a lot of these families, they would be kind of going down the list with you. Oh, you should not do this or that. Like, no kissing, no hand holding until whatever, engagement, no, whatever that might look like. Engagement would have rules that are different than the dating / courtship phase / pre-courtship. And then I'm
like
laughing because there's this whole with reality TV.
I could go on.
You add that to it and it's like you have to have a pre-courtship.
Pre-pre-pre if you're really young. Y'all,
hold up.
I was like, at some point, it's the same as like any other high school dating. It's like,
because this you have is pre, to get pre, to pre know the person. Because
you're 15.
When you're in a reality TV show or you're in the spotlight or whatever, you don't want to like get to know the person for the first time on TV. Because what if you don't work out?
Yeah.
So you kind of have to do this secret like pre-courtship. And then you can have your pre-courtship on,
we need a diagram. We need a diagram
on camera.
Your pre-courtship.
You can have your pre-courtship on camera where you're kind of getting to know them, but you kind of already know, like maybe you're going to work out. And or then
we're just friends. No, just friends, this isn't just friends,
but we're committed friends. And then you have
committed friends.
And then you have, and then you have like the official ask. But we had to like involve the cameras and all of that. But I wouldn't even tell the producers until I had an idea that I was going to like go further. But anyways, all that to say, courtship's very involved with like parents and their blessing.
Okay.
And no, usually it involves limited physical contact, chaperones on dates, those types of things, varying degrees within families, like as to what that looks like. No dating
without any, like you cannot go on a date just the two of you. That's not allowed.
No, but it was not usually unless you're like 30 years old. Maybe you're
maybe at 30 you can go on one.
Which is funny to me because I'm like very much about like, you know,
because maybe you're mature enough to not like
as a lawyer, like you want to find a rule. Like, what is the rule? Like, why 30? Why not 25 if you're mature? Like, what's the difference? And like, if you're 25, like you have, I love her brother, James. He was our chaperone most of the time.
But you paid him with Skittles.
I love James, but he's, I love James, but he was like 13 at the time and I could give him Skittles and I was like 25 and I was like, he's the one keeping us accountable for that what we're supposed hilarious. To do or not do. And he's,
you're like, well, my brother has to come
did
with
you guys keep like a foot between you? No, I'm just kidding. Like,
6-inch rule.
Actually, there was a 6-inch rule.
Yes, kind of, yeah. Like you couldn't.
So I could mean, you sit next to each other, but only with a 6-inch space?
Pretty much, yeah.
Really? And could you hold hands?
Not until we were engaged.
Not allowed to.
Whoa.
And we didn't kiss until our wedding day.
Wow, yeah. And which was on national. Yeah. You're like, how do I do? Did you have to have someone teach you how to kiss? Because that's, I mean, stressful.
So go for actually, the lips, right?
No, but that was your actual first kiss, was on national television.
Yeah.
Wow.
From every angle. And then they like analyze it. The first, actually.
That's so much
when
pressure.
When I first watched our wedding show, I cried and I called the producer and like chewed him out. I was like, no. It was terrible. What? It was terrible.
What did they do?
Like, not because she's a diva, but because the whole thing about like
my
just,
wedding was great. It was the show, like the editing and everything. Mm. They were like trying to make it look like, I don't know, they were trying to like play up different aspects of it where they're like rating our kiss and like having all my siblings give commentary on it and like.
But especially when like
That's your wedding day.
Like, yeah. I was like, make it about the wedding day.
It's like, shut up.
This is like, give me a break. Plus, okay, the poor producer, though. Yeah. The poor producer, though. He is a great friend. Like, I'd known these people since I was 12, you know? So I'm like, I know them all. We hang out with each other and their kids and whatever. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I can shoot straight. But most of the time, I was a very passive person. But when I was... when I watched the wedding episode, I was pregnant. I had been sick with mono for like 2 weeks. I couldn't even swallow water. You know, I'm like, and then they send me this wedding show and I watch it and I was like,
you feel completely taken advantage of.
Not only did they hear from me, but they got it all, an earful because I was like hormones. Like,
yeah. Oh, they'll do something to
you. Oh, yeah.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. I feel like in the new year, there's a lot of pressure to create a whole new list of resolutions and like completely revamp your life. And that can be really overwhelming. I mean, as I was creating my own list of resolutions, I was like, there's some things I'm pretty proud of. Like, for instance, I didn't make any health related goals in 2024 because I feel like I'm happy where I'm at right now. I go to the gym frequently.
Yeah, you've inspired me to make goals that don't just revolve around business, because I always think about what's a business goal for this next year, and rather maybe it's like, hey, what's a goal for the betterment of my well-being? Maybe it's my physical health, maybe it's my mental health, because those things are actually really important.
And they impact every other area of your life, including your business. Around New Year's, we get obsessed with how to change ourselves instead of just expanding on what we're already doing right. And therapy helps you find your strengths so you can ditch the extreme resolutions and make changes that really stick. I think therapy is a great resolution to add to your life if you haven't already started for 2024.
100%. And I, again, just echoing what I said before, rather than thinking, oh, I'm going to go to the gym X amount of times in the new year, maybe a goal for the new year is I'm going to start going to therapy. I'm going to start meditating. I'm going to start prioritizing my mental health.
Of course. And BetterHelp is probably the most convenient way to get into therapy because it's entirely online. It's convenient and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire online and they'll match you with a licensed therapist. And the great thing is that if it doesn't work out for whatever reason with that therapist, you can switch to another licensed therapist with no additional fee. You're pretty much guaranteed to find a good fit for you. Celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit betterhelp.com/unplannedpodcast today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/unplannedpodcast.
Now back to the episode.
Was that your first kiss too, Derek?
With her? Yeah.
Oh, okay. So,
that was my follow-up question. What are your current views on courtship? Like, is that something you would encourage your sons to do, or
a different version?
Yeah, I mean, I think, when we got married, we went to this marriage seminar thing and they had some really good advice actually from this, they talked about taking things from your upbringing and kind of like, taking it. Yeah. And
like, as a married couple, you've got two families of origin, like the new husband, the new wife.
Explain it better.
Well, I'm just like kind of simplify it, but I'm just thinking like, and there's certain things you want to accept from either side of your family, certain things you want to reject from either side of your family, and then certain things you can recycle and make your own. And then, so like, you're coming in and you're building your own family culture, like, because you have the way you grew up and then the other spouse has the way they grew up. And then, like, will become your own identity. What things do you like about each of your backgrounds? What things do you not like? And then what things do you kind of like, but you don't like the way it was done? Kind of recycle it, make it your own.
So like that being said, when our kids are in their mid-20s, we're probably not going to have the same level of control in their lives. They're probably not going to be like working for us, living under our roof, all of the things that we, like, I was doing. You weren't, but
building,
like,
a house, you know.
Yeah, like, it's probably going to look a whole lot different. And then on top of that, I'm not going to be telling them you have to do this. Okay. Now, I think that we will have a lot of say so as they're growing to adulthood, like, what should relationships look like? What should this dating experience be? I'm not just going to be like hands off completely as they're maturing. Like, I think when they're under our roof, like, we're going to have some pretty strict rules. We're not just going to let them, like, you know, sleep around at home or something.
Yeah.
But I think that it will not be as strict.
And it was the day before your wedding, right, that you guys signed the contract that effectively said, I have to give away, like, I have to be able to film for the next 5 years if the show needs it, essentially.
I signed it. I never signed it.
You never signed it. So you were just kind of, you were doing it just to be a good son-in-law.
Just be a good son-in-law.
No, he didn't even know it existed.
I didn't know it existed.
Well, you didn't really know what it was. Yeah, I was lied to, basically. Like, I didn't know what I was signing. Mm-hmm. He didn't even know that I'd signed anything because it wasn't in my mind.
And I took off work that day. I must have been at the bathroom or something. Yeah. And it's like, quick, sign this while you're... future husband's in the bathroom.
What did they tell you that you were signing? Like, what? Yeah, what did they say?
It's just about how you're going to get paid. For all I knew, it could have been like something to do with like taxes in the show. Like, okay. I don't know. And I was naive, like, to think, oh, I need to know about this. I mean, I knew it was something to do with the show. And when I asked, it was just like, oh, this is just about how you're going to get paid. And I was
Which is that you're not until we die. So
this is like the day of my rehearsal. So weird. And like, I'm moving out. And like, yeah.
Like, you'll get an inheritance someday. Okay, but that's different than like agreeing to be bound by something. You don't have to do that to get your inheritance.
Was that contract with Mad Family Inc?
Mm-hmm.
So literally your parents, it wasn't even involving TLC. It was a contract with your parents.
Well, it was with them, but it was like obligating, like my dad was like obligating
the services of all talent. Other talent
to be available to TLC.
Talent being all so it was of her with siblings.
TLC, yeah. But my dad, if the contract was broken, he's the one that would
take the fall for it.
And who do you think is most at fault with that whole situation? Because obviously you have TLC over here who is only communicating with your dad, even though there's adults, you being.
I thought about that reading your book. I was like, I wonder why TLC isn't directly going to you.
When it's Jill and Jessa counting
on. Yeah, because it's easier to deal with like one person than it is to deal with 20. So I assume that if they think, oh, you know, yeah, sure. Like, if everybody's cool with it this way, they're not. As long as they get the signatures that they need, then they don't have to worry about. And whatever, and they're just I think honestly in this culture too, it's just kind of like what I don't know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like even if they get air wind of things, like it's probably just like what I don't know doesn't you know. In fact, I don't know. I can't speak for them, but I would say that if they had questions about how's this all going down or how's it all working out, shaking out, then they probably, as long as their part of things is working fine and the show's doing fine, they're probably like, let's just ride this out until
in my whatever. Legal but opinion, they did not do their due diligence.
Yeah.
So in your book, you talk about getting this random IRS document and then you realize, wait a second, my parents have been saying that they've been paying me out money for X amount of years, and you, with your accounting background, went in, did some digging, and figured out the exact amount that they had claimed, I guess, to have paid you. And so was it at that point where, since you were going back to school, so many things were happening, you were, on paper it was shown that you were paid this money, so you just decided, hey, I think we should deserve to be paid what was recorded for the IRS, you know?
Yeah, well, I think it was several things.
Overall, like, the biggest takeaway for us was just that there were things being continually hidden. Like, we would hit a roadblock, and then like her dad, because he was over Mad Family Inc., Jim Bob, would basically kind of make it look like he was coming forth and being like, I'm sorry, this is how it was. Like, you figured this out. Like, we didn't mean this or whatever. We really weren't trying to do anything intentionally. Sorry. And then move on. There'd be something else we'd hit. And it's like, no, there's this other thing. Mm. And then it's like, well,
there's a lack of transparency.
There's no transparency, because it's almost like it's better to ask for forgiveness than for permission. And once like we bring something up that we're should have been made aware of and that's harmed us, it's not like, oh, well, sorry, we didn't even think about this. Like, there's this other stuff too. And like, if you need to make a decision based on this other information too, then by all means, like, we really didn't mean to like keep this from you, versus like, oh no, like, they figured out, not figured out, but like, they're aware of this. We're gonna like dig our heels in and not reveal any other information that could affect your lives.
Basically, it's a lot easier to fess up when you've been caught in it versus just like going above and beyond to just be transparent and say, here's where it's at, here's what's happening, like, I'm sorry I did this, but here's this also. And you can only claim the ignorance side of it or accidental oversight so many times. Mm-hmm. And so for us, when we got this tax document in the mail, and then, you know, we're finding out different things, we're finally like, hey, like, we've been screwed over. This is not okay. Mm-hmm. Here's your opportunity to, like, prove it to us. Like, yeah. prove to us that you want to do what's right. And because, like, there are consequences for mistakes. So, like, okay, if it's a mistake, normally, if it's a mistake, you would then come back and be like, I'm so sorry. Let me make it right.
Yeah.
So make it right. Like, here's mm-hmm. what we're offering. We felt like it was a very, like, clear cut. Like, we laid it out clearly. Like, here's... We didn't feel like it was unfair, unjustified. Mm-hmm. And so when we made the proposal,
okay, if
we felt like it was a matter of
principle. We knew it was not fair. Like, we knew it wasn't about fairness. No. Mm-hmm. But it's not about fairness. It's about principle at this
point. I'm saying, like, fair on the side of, like, it wasn't unfair to ask for this. It was not just, it was not the reasonable fair amount. It was less than that we were asking for. But it was the principle of the thing. Like, okay, you say that you've changed. You say that you want to make things right. What can you do? You're asking us, what can I do to make this right? I feel like there's a wall between us type thing. Like, how can I make this right? And we're like, here's a tangible, like, numbers speak. So here's a tangible number. You can fix this. Here's the error. Fix it. Like, Derek's working in accounting. You know, it's like.
And you hadn't even seen the contract yet,
just
right?
To acknowledge
at that point, you weren't even aware of what you signed.
We see these numbers. Derek's, you know, getting ready to go to law school and a lot of times, like, scholarships are based on income. Okay. And there's been this income that's been reported in previous years that's not reflecting what our true income is, what we've actually seen. We don't know where those checks went. So, like, we're just like, okay, prove to us by your actions that what you're saying with your words is true. And
like, so I would not be surprised because of, like, what we share in this book, that after our book counted the cost, if Jim Bob Duggar gets another, or if Mad Family Inc. specifically gets another audit. And
oh, really?
Because of, and gets in trouble.
That's not our goal.
That's not,
like,
our goal.
We're not just, like, out
That's
to
not
people.
Our goal. But, like, because of just how bad things have gotten, like, you don't want it to get to that point, and you hope things get made right before it gets to that point.
I think you mentioned too that it was almost like your siblings were almost turned against you. It was almost this idea of, oh, you're a threat. You're a threat to the business and the show. Because
you
were
the trust circle.
Yeah.
Because you're one of the family members. It's like, there's always been this tight knit, like, we bind together. Anything happens, we all go out to the farm and just hunker down and, like, don't let the paparazzi find us type thing. So now that it's, like, somebody inside that circle questioning, then you're, like, cast out to some degree. I mean, my parents have always, they've still wanted to, like, you know, come bring Christmas presents or birthday presents and that type of thing, like, have some kind of relationship there. But yes, you get, like, kind of kicked out or black sheep. You know, like,
do you think it was feelings. What was the main reason why they weren't paying you what they reported on taxes? Was it because of worrying that your other siblings would then want to be paid out that amount as well? Which then
that was one thought that was actually expressed verbally to us, was like, you know, we can't do this 20 times over and those kinds of things. Yeah. Like, just let us control it. We know what's best for everybody. It's, again, it goes back to that mentality of, like, not recognizing the true value that's been given by the people involved, aka your children, who are now adults, like, not recognizing that value. And then also just, like, wanting that persistent control and leadership of this organization, you know, this family business thing, and just not wanting to
let it go a little. Okay. Like, and I'll get on my soapbox a little bit, like, the tax law is meant to make things fair, not necessarily, again, people get equal and fair, like, confused. Mm-hmm. But, like, the tax law is meant to be fair. And if you, a pet peeve of mine is whenever people, it doesn't matter, like, rich, poor, whatever, who want to manipulate that and take advantage of it and make it reflect something that's not what it was meant to reflect or the policy was meant to, like, push forward. And if you're saying on paper, oh, well, you know, it's spread out this much and, like, so we shouldn't have to pay as much taxes, but then ultimately, I'm still going to get the benefit of controlling all this money, then that's not what that was set in place to do, and it's not fair.
This episode is sponsored by Nutrafol. Something about Matt Howard that you may or may not know, he has an insecurity, as we all do.
Yes, my hair is very fine, and I had my brother take a video of my head the other day, and it freaked me out. You can kind of see my scalp.
I know, I saw that on his camera roll, and I was like, Matt, why'd you take this picture? He's like, I think I'm losing my hair. And something else about Matt is that he will not make an appointment to save his life. So you're not going to find him in the doctor's office to address hair loss, thinning, shedding. But that's okay because Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, and faster growing hair with less shedding.
Yes.
I'm experiencing it too, especially postpartum. That's a classic time that your hair likes to just come out on the shower wall.
I've been seeing your hair on the shower wall.
Yeah, I'm losing a lot, and that's why I really need to be more diligent about taking my Nutrafol. The thing about hair thinning is that it's different for men and women. So a one-size-fits-all approach to hair growth doesn't cut it. Nutrafol has multiple formulas that are tailored to give your hair what it needs to grow based on your biology, life stage, and lifestyle factors. With Nutrafol, building a hair growth routine is simple. You purchase online, no prescription, like we said, or doctor's visits required. It's free shipping and automated deliveries ensure you'll never miss a day. So we need that because we are very forgetful people, and we are both on our Nutrafol grind. Take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code UNPLANNED. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and stylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code UNPLANNED. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code UNPLANNED.
Back to the episode. Do you still have siblings that are in contract with Mad Family Inc.?
To my knowledge, as far as I understand, yes. But I'm careful with what I speak about my other siblings because I want to protect our relationship as much as possible too, totally, with my siblings. So I am very careful. Even in our book, you would have seen that we didn't label people, even though there were hard times that we wanted to address and talk about the dynamics with my siblings and how at times it was not great. And there have been some pretty heated conversations even amongst the siblings and us. I still try to be very careful about just singling people out and all that, because I haven't gone down that road as long with them, and they haven't, I'm not in the same place with them as I am with where I was with my parents at that time and sorting all that out.
Something I really want to commend you on, in writing your book, is that it feels like you were very, it feels so candid, so truthful, yet so respectful, even though there was definitely you've expressed hurt in your relationship with your parents, the way even you talked about them while sharing the truth, just so much respect. And I think it also adds to the credibility of your story too, that you're able to see it with through such a complex lens. And saying things you want to take from your childhood into your own parenting. I think that was just very interesting.
Because there are. And I think that's one thing people were quick to say, you're just when they heard there was going to be a book and then they hadn't read it yet, they would say, everybody makes mistakes. I'm like, yes, everyone
does. Or don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. All these different things.
There are things. Does everybody buckle down and say, but I'm right in the mistakes that I made? No. But I think that's where we butt heads sometimes with my family. It's where they say, but this is right. And then there's other times where they're they do admit they were wrong in something, or whatever. So I'm
the roses and thorns analogy.
Yeah. So we do recognize that you can have the benefits and the negative parts of that story. And it's kind of like roses and thorns. You have the beautiful moments, the fun times, the things that filming with the reality TV show brought us, traveling. My parents were great parents overall. And yet you have the more negative times, and it's okay to not just look over one or the other because of that. You can bring both to the table and say, when it's necessary, this is my story. I have positives and negatives, and don't have to silence your story in an effort to just keep the peace. So I think it's very valuable to present those things. And again, you don't have to just go and tell your entire story or bash people or whatever, but where it's productive and where it's your story to tell, that's what we're doing. We're telling our story. Right. We're not trying to tell everybody else's story. Unfortunately, it intersects with other people's stories at different points, but try to be respectful.
And one thing that I would push back on people with, who would say the fact that someone has these positive aspects of their life bars you from being able to tell your story because they did these good things, then they couldn't have done anything bad. Is like, I mean, think about if our society operated that way, like with like people like Al Capone, as long as it's like mobster. This is an extreme example, obviously, yeah, but it paints the picture. But it paints the picture. But basically, like, if it's a side, if you're like, oh, well, I know this criminal, like, I didn't even think they were a criminal. Like, they've always been really nice to me, so mm-hmm. you shouldn't punish them.
Look,
like,
at all the charities yeah. they've like, given to, look at all the, like, good they've done. It's like, well,
I mentioned Al Capone because, you know, I don't think a lot of people realize he had like soup kitchens and stuff. He was helping a lot of people.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was helping.
I didn't know that about
helping a lot of people. And if someone only knew him in that context, they would say, you can't send him to jail. Look at all the good things he's doing. He's got soup kitchens. He's feeding all these people. But it's not about your good outweighing your bad. Like, just because you do good things doesn't justify being able to do all these horrible things over here. It's like, well, as long as I can keep doing good things, then that'll check the box and I can continue doing these bad things too.
And with added influence comes added weight of responsibility as well. So growing up in reality TV and like promoting these mm-hmm. things, we kind of felt this responsibility also to come in and say, hey, but here's where I think we got it wrong. Or here's where our story, because my family growing up in reality TV advocated for these principles, now we're saying, but here's where maybe it didn't work out so great, you know, like, don't take this to the nth, or you might think this is what is happening and you can just live your life this way and it's all going to work out this way, but just be careful, be aware of these pitfalls. Like, it's mm-hmm. helpful.
If it weren't for the show and the platform, like, we wouldn't have written a book because no one would care. Like, so part of that comes with, like, you feel like you called to a certain stewardship or a certain way to steward, like, the platform you've been given, because, like, mm-hmm. it would be a difficult road for us, as it is for a lot of people who've related to our book, but they don't have the, you know, the platform to be able to share things that could really benefit probably even potentially more people than our book could benefit, because they might have like certain lessons that like go even further, but then the platform's not there. So we feel
we're not invalidating their story either and saying ours is, whatever. It's like, it's very much.
If anything, I'm trying to like validate it more by saying like, there's some people who have even more, I mean, a lot more incredible stories that would help a lot more people. Again, we just felt the responsibility to, you know, share our story and say, you know, this isn't better, it's not worse, it's just our story.
And I'm so curious, have you guys talked to your parents since the release of the book?
Yes, I didn't like sit down and have a conversation and say, what do you think about the book?
Okay.
Did
they read it? Or
I've heard that they did.
Oh, okay.
I heard they like listened to it on audiobook or something. I heard both of them did, but know. Like, I'm not going to, it's,
through the
they're my parents and I'm just, I'm going to tread lightly. I also don't want to just like create more controversy. It's kind of like when you get together at the holidays and there are just certain things that you don't like want to just bring up.
Yes.
It's probably a sore subject. So I know that they would probably want to sit down with a therapist or something and just hash it out. But we've tried that before and it just is not the healthiest way to go about it. So we're still on the road to figuring things out. But I have seen my, have we seen both of my parents? No, I think we've just seen.
Just your mom.
My mom.
Was the last time that you were all together with your parents, was that the birth of your most recent son?
Probably.
I'm trying to think.
Which I guess like, was 17
months. Like, wait, was it that? Or was it a wedding? Or was it a... Have there been any weddings since then? I can't remember. I feel like I saw... No. We saw them at a birthday party.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We saw them at a birthday party since then.
Which birthday?
Joyn Austin's, like, one of their kids' birthday thing or something. Or baby announcement or something. I don't know. Some kind of family function thing.
Mm. And do you guys just don't really talk? Or you kind of just
say
hi?
That was before the book.
Oh, that was before the book.
That was over a year ago.
Since we had our last baby.
Gotcha.
It's been since
the book written, but like it was released or something.
And your siblings, do you see your siblings often?
Yeah, like depending on the sibling, several of my siblings. It's still one of those situations where you kind of have to like know like what am I up for emotionally? Mm. And because a lot of times Derek and I will debrief afterwards, like, okay, like, how did this go? And I would be lying if I would say that it's completely like it used to be, or there aren't any triggers, or it doesn't bring up any trauma at all. Like, there are those moments, but I can definitely get together with some of my siblings and just have a great time and go to lunch for my sister's birthdays or something.
And everyone's on their own journey.
But it's so hard.
And they're at a different place in their journey.
Yeah.
And this book is for them just as much as it's for other people. Like, maybe if they're 17 and living under their parents' roof, it's not going to help them right now, but maybe it's something that could be a resource for them 10 years
for later
from now.
Maybe they would be like, oh, I can relate to your story or whatever. But yeah, there are parts of my childhood, you know, if I'm getting together with one of my siblings and things aren't like they used to be, there's a part of me that's like sad about that, you know, because you're like, I wish things could be like they were before. But at the same time, kind of like I talk about in the book, it's like, would I trade just ignorance is bliss in this pseudo bliss for where we're at? No, like, I don't want to just go back to like living in this crazy controlling environment.
We choose freedom,
even if it's hard. Mm-hmm. And that's why our title of our book, Counting the Cost, was so perfect for our story, because it's not just a one-time thing. It's very much like
you count the cost daily of what you're having to give up, like, versus like,
not that I'm just like giving up my family nothing. No, we are doing the hard work now.
So far as it depends on us, we want to live in peace.
Continue those relationships and continue to press on to have good relationships going forward. But it is a process and it's hard. If you're going to do it right, it's hard. Like, it's not all or nothing. It's not just like giving up the boundaries and walking back into it, or holding fast and like saying, I'm out of here. Yeah. Like, it's, if you're going to do it, and we live somewhat close to family, so if you're gonna like take those steps to hopefully have better relationships, it's hard work.
And like, yeah, even like doing podcasts like this, like, we're trying to, you know, sometimes communicate to siblings and say like, we're trying to do everything we can to live at peace. And we realize that like certain siblings have one voice that they're hearing from and they don't hear our voice. So even being able to have a platform and being able to talk about these things are a potential way that like, if our siblings wanted to like kind of hear more from a different source than whoever they might be hearing from who doesn't like what we're doing, then they could at least have a way at some point to go back and hear that.
Mm. Yeah. And I wish we had more time, because I feel like I could talk to you guys for like four hours. But one last question I did have for you was, if your parents were here, since you haven't seen them since the release of the book, what would you say? What would you say to them?
We love you guys. Like, I think that's the same thing that they say. Like, we've texted and we've just said, we love you. Like, we're going to agree to disagree. We are our own family, and we're comfortable with being our own family and where we are as the Dillard family. Mm-hmm. But we love you, and we want to take steps to have a healthy relationship. But what that looks like and what we're comfortable with and what they're comfortable with will probably, we might have different ideas of what that looks like. But we hope that we can go forward with mutual respect for each other, and it's a journey.
Yeah.
I love
that. I really commend you guys for that approach and everything that you've done with your book and your family.
And I love the analogy that you gave of the roses and the thorns. I think that's so good. And I don't know, I feel like everyone can relate to that with their individual stories. Mm. Well, thank you guys for coming on. If you haven't checked out Jill's book, go read it. It's really good. It's even like free on Spotify. I listened to the last chapter on Spotify this morning. So check it out.
It's
thank you guys.
On Kindle.
Oh,
I have it on my Kindle too.
We've got it on Kindle. We have the physical copy too, but you guys are awesome. And you can follow them on Instagram, YouTube. You guys have a YouTube channel with the whole fam, right?
Yeah, so we've kind of, I'm not on there quite as much, but we are on social media. And check out our book, Counting the Cost. And it's done really well, thankfully. Thanks to so much support. New York Times bestseller, 4 months in a row here since the launch.
Congratulations.
So on different levels.
Well, thank you guys for listening. And if you made it this far, definitely consider subscribing or following the podcast while you obviously follow Jill and Derek too. But we appreciate you guys. And as always, this is where we say peace out, dudes. 3, 2, 1.
Peace out, dudes.